Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets, in the car while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, take us back to 1964. We're picking up a newspaper. Mm-hmm. What's going to be the big news? Like, what's captivate? What's the juicy story that everyone's outraged about?
Well, there is a woman named Kitty Genovese, and
okay. this is New York City.
This
right?
is in New. It's actually in Queens.
Queens. Okay.
And she is a 28-year-old bar manager, and she's coming back from her job something like 3 o'clock in the morning, and she gets out of her car. And she's walking, and she is all of a sudden she's in hot pursuit by this guy wielding a knife.
Yeah.
And she happens to be in a neighborhood, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she calls out for help. He begins to stab her. And the story goes like this, that for 35 minutes during three different attacks, because this guy like attacks her, and then he realizes that his car is in the open and people will ID his car. So he goes and he moves his car and he comes back mm-hmm. and he starts attacking her, and then so on and so forth. Three different attacks. Her cries were heard by an estimated 38 people.
And all of this unprovoked, just out of the blue, random attack.
Yeah.
And she dies.
She dies.
Yeah.
Finally, though, one person telephones the police. One person out of the 38. This is the story.
Right.
And it absolutely shocks the United States, the people of the United States. They're just horrified that we could let this happen to a fellow human, particularly when they say that the people who overheard this say, yeah, I heard this lady screaming and I didn't know what was going on, or I didn't want to get involved. That was something that they heard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just awful to think that we could allow something like this to happen to another person.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It is a really to hear this story as it was popularized in the New York Times
mm-hmm.
That year, and has since become a popularized version of this story. It's really damning information, because the idea is, hey, I could be that one person,
right?
And then you feel shameful to think, but then am I one of those 30 people that in any other situation would do nothing?
Right. Yeah. People really took it to heart, and it became known as the Genovese syndrome, but also known as the bystander effect, which is something that's probably known. That term is known better now.
Or just bystander apathy, right?
Bystander yeah. apathy. Yeah. That's another one. But what we found out, though, is that this story was actually greatly exaggerated. Yes. Kitty Genovese was killed by a man who went out that night and decided that he was going to kill a woman.
And attacked her. And he was very open about this. Like, there, this guy was mentally disturbed.
Yeah.
And was very open about, I went out to kill somebody that night.
Yeah.
And he's still in prison to this day.
Is he really?
This, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But it turns out that there weren't as many bystanders as previously thought. There was something around the order of six people. And in fact, she was at one point dragged to this one part of the building. I think it was in maybe like the portico. And one guy could hear her essentially being finished off, so to speak. But he, you know, he still didn't contact the police. He was inebriated. He didn't want to get involved. So he did ask his neighbor to call the police.
Yeah. There's an American psychologist paper from 2007 where they went back and they were going beyond the New York Times article and looking at legal documents, court transcripts, and some recent historical research into the event, into the attack. And they had found that there were two attacks, not three, that the way that the crime scene was configured would have made it impossible for all but one of the known witnesses to have seen the crime in its entirety.
Yeah.
And the police may have been called in much earlier than thought, and she may have been alive when the cops arrived.
Okay.
So.
Okay. And the reason why we're bringing all this up is because, you know, whether or not the story was exaggerated, what it did is it actually helped people to put a term to something that actually is a real condition, the bystander effect.
It kicked off enough outrage and public interest that we named it, and a lot of really solid research went into why this kind of behavior exists in the crowds.
Yeah, and we've seen this again and again. And in fact, Joseph DeMay, who talks about the story and how it's exaggerated, was asked on the show, on the media, it's an NPR show. It's really great if you haven't checked it out. He was asked, well, so, okay, if that story was exaggerated, that, does it really exist? And he said, well, of course the bystander effect exists. Just look around you. You know, there was that incident where a poor worker was trampled at the Greenacre Shopping Center by shoppers anxious to get an electronics sale. We've seen this again and again. I think just most recently there was a pregnant woman who was trampled and lost her baby with this same sort of excitement that was happening around a sale.
Yeah, and you don't even really you don't even have to go to outrageous newspaper stories to get examples of it. Just any time you've ever driven down the highway and passed that poor guy, that poor family that has a flat tire.
Right.
Because you just keep going and you probably don't even really think anything about it.
Well, you think someone else will help.
Well, yeah,
right?
if you even consciously, you know, turn the wheels, like maybe, you know, it's happening at subconscious level a lot of the time, but you know, you might think, oh, well, someone else will help them, or, oh, they probably called AAA, or they got it.
Well, and even in a circumstance like this, DeMay points out, like, there was a woman in the Kings County psychiatric ward who collapsed on the floor there, where she's being taken care of, right, in theory. So basically the staff just left her there to die, you know, 4 hours later she died. And then he also said, you know, that you can look in the newspaper on any given day and see something that is, reflective of the bystander effect. And he says that, you know, it's this diffusion of responsibility, and it's impossible to say that such a phenomenon of some sort does not exist.
Yeah. So there are four key components in the bystander effect. Like you said, one of them is diffuse responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the simple idea that, if 30 people were witnessing something, then if I'm one of 30 people witnessing an event, well, there are 29 other people that could do something. It's like
right.
If I'm driving down an interstate and I see somebody with a flat tire, there are countless cars. Like, there are plenty of other people. I'm just one of many. Somebody will do something about that. But if I am on a deserted road in the middle of nowhere, and I know that I'm probably one of the only people that's going to go down that road today, and I see somebody with a flat tire, well, then there's not really much in the way of diffused responsibility unless I have some sort of mistaken idea that a woodchuck's going to help this guy with his tire.
A woodchuck could, if a woodchuck could.
That's true. That's the thing. another one is self-awareness. All right.
Yeah.
This is the perceived or actual presence of an audience to your actions that inhibits you from acting. All right. You don't want to appear foolish or inappropriate. An example of this, takes me back to this weekend when I was at the dentist office and I go in, I'm sitting down at the dentist office and they always have, you know, the TVs on and it's playing something annoying. I was the only person in there and they were playing an episode of, Law and Order Special Victims Unit. And it was like this whole thing, it all has to do with like sexual assault, like very much the kind of thing that we covered, the kind of story we covered with at the beginning.
It's not
of this
necessarily
podcast.
Something that you want to watch while you are in a dentist chair.
Yeah, right? But I'm kind of like, all right, I don't feel like like complaining about it. But then a mother and two kids come into the dentist office.
Mm-hmm.
And they sit down, they like start filling out their paperwork, but it's like two little kids and they're reading their little children's books and the mom's sitting there looking at a magazine and the TV is Special Victims Unit with, investigators, looking into like sexual offenses and,
right.
and some pretty graphic discussion of what these crimes consisted of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sitting there and part of me is like, I should get up and go tell the lady at the front desk, hey, there are kids here.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you change to Disney Channel or something?
Right.
Or something less, potentially traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
But the other voice, was saying, no, the mom's sitting right there. I'm going to come mm-hmm. off looking like a total jerk because I'm going to be implying that she doesn't know what she's doing or
right.
that she isn't exerting enough responsibility for these kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the self-awareness factor of it.
Okay.
We're afraid, somebody needs help, but are we going to look stupid getting up and going to help them?
So we're afraid of being judged.
Right. All right. Then the next one is social clues. All right. Individuals actively look to one another for cues about how to behave in the situation.
Oh, is this the pluralistic ignorance?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
This is like, say you're on the subway train,
mm-hmm.
and there's somebody acting, there's somebody acting strange.
Mm-hmm.
There, you sort of look to everybody else to say, hey, should we be concerned about this? Is this for real? Is
yeah.
this a deal? You know, and if everyone else is ignoring it, you're kind of like, all right, I guess this is nothing. I'm just going to, eye straight ahead, right back to my book or something. But if
mm-hmm.
everyone else is looking a little weird, then you're like, all right, this is something serious. So one of us is going to have to get up and go push the alert button.
Right.
That
okay.
kind of situation. And then there's blocking.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a realization that if somebody needs help, all 30 of us cannot help in this particular situation. Like if it's a situation where you just need one person, maybe two,
mm-hmm.
to help this individual with their situation,
mm-hmm.
30 people is just going to overwhelm them and
mm-hmm.
possibly make the situation worse.
So is that same idea of just shirking off the responsibility because
yeah.
you figure that someone else is going to help or?
Right.
Okay.
Like there are 30 people and then there's another person who has a cut on their finger.
Mm-hmm.
If we all go and put a Band-Aid on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the person doesn't need 30 Band-Aids. They need one, maybe two Band-Aids, if they want to do the cross thing. But
that would be kind of awesome, though,
yeah.
and horrible, too.
30 Band-Aids.
Crushed
at once,
by
yeah.
30 people just trying to get your hand bandaged. This diffusion of responsibility, I think, is really interesting. And there are two rules that we usually operate under when we're in society. One, that we ought to help, right?
Mm-hmm.
And two, that we ought to do what everyone else is doing. So these temporary rules bubble up that we inadvertently create when we're a group, which we're not even communicating to one another, with language, right?
Right.
We're not even saying, hey, let's not do this because we all feel okay with it. But somehow we all know that, we're all bouncing off of each other and somehow are thinking to ourselves, okay, well, if you're not concerned about it, then I'm not concerned about it. And I think that's fascinating. And there were a bunch of BBC shorts were experiments that you can go on YouTube and see them, where they show this in action. And I thought it was pretty fascinating. They did one set of videos at the Liverpool Street Station in London. And there was an actor dressed in jeans and overcoat and sneakers, and he's crumpled up at the foot of the stairs. And he's saying to people as they pass by, please help me, please help me. And he lays there for 20 minutes without anybody helping him. Which I think in and of itself is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But then they have a female actor do the same thing. She's dressed in a skirt and a jacket. She has a purse on. And she's not saying, help me, but she kind of looks dead, actually. But she sprawled out on the stairs. And 34 people pass in 4 minutes, and they don't help her. And finally, there's a woman who is, you see her behavior. It's really interesting. She starts to pass by, and then she stops, and she kind of looks around at other people like, hey, isn't this weird?
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of circles and hangs out, but she's not quite going to do anything yet. Out of nowhere, this guy comes up directly to the woman and says, are you okay? And then all of a sudden, she's right by his side. And she's saying, can I help you? She needed that guy to come to,
right.
to corroborate her concern.
Yeah. And you see that happen a lot. It's like the first person to actually come forward and try to help somebody, then
mm-hmm.
suddenly there are a few other people as well.
Yeah.
Maybe not all 30, but suddenly it'll go from you know, from nothing to five or six, just like that.
Yeah, well, and this was the most interesting one. This is the third person in this experiment. It was the same actor from the first that was crumpled on the stairs with his jeans on. But now he comes back and he's dressed in like an impeccable, expensive suit, and he's crumpled up at the bottom of the stairs, and it takes just 6 seconds for one person to help him, which then attracts this crowd of people who are now around him saying, yeah, can I help you? So there is this one element where we're sort of ceding our decisions to other people. But then it's sort of like, well, if you look socially like in the most correct role, then you're probably going to get more help, right?
Right.
Because he looked important.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to look at some of that hard research that popped up following this, the Genovese case.
This podcast is brought to you by Intel, the sponsors of tomorrow, and the Discovery Channel. At Intel, we believe curiosity is the spark which drives innovation. Join us at curiosity.com and explore the answers to life's questions.
All right, and we're back. So, like we said, the Genovese case, some of the details are kind of disproven today, and the version of the story that is sometimes referenced in papers and textbooks, et cetera, is maybe not the true version of what happened. It's become a parable.
Mm-hmm.
But the research, as we said, is still pretty solid. Like, people were outraged enough by this that they were like, let's do some studies. And the first big study was this one by Darley and Letain, right?
Yeah, John Darley and Bibb Letain, that this whole Genovese syndrome or bystander effect really inspired them to try to look at this in multiple models and really ferret out what was going on. And I think one of the ones that I think is most interesting to me is the lady in distress. In this experiment, subjects either waited alone with a friend or with a passive confederate, meaning an actor who was acting passively, right?
Okay.
Or with a stranger in a room. And the room was separate from another room by a curtain, which they would pass on their way to their waiting room. And the experimenter who led them there returned to the other room and left, turning on a tape recording of what sounded like someone falling and then moaning in that other room. So they couldn't see that person, but for 130 seconds, they could hear this person in some sort of distress. And they measured the percent of people who took action and how long it took for them to act. And overall, 61% of people pulled back the curtain to check on the experimenter because they assumed it was the experimenter who fell, right?
Right.
14% entered via another door to check on the experimenter, and 24% simply called out to say, hey, are you okay? But nobody went to actually report the accident, okay, to say, hey, there's someone hurt in the other room. And this is where the data gets really interesting. 70% of alone subjects reacted, but only 7% of those with another person in the room, the passive confederate, the actor who just sat there and pretended like everything was okay, only 7% of them reacted.
Oh, wow.
So it means that if you're by yourself, you're probably going to be a lot more responsible, right?
Uh-huh.
But if someone else is in the room, they don't seem concerned, boom, it doesn't matter. The subjects with confederates became confused and they frequently looked over at the person. And when they were paired with a stranger, only 40% of those people in the room with a stranger actually acted out. Or said, hey, are you okay? So when they had their friends in the room, 70% of the time they helped, which shows, you know, that they felt responsibility with someone that they knew.
Right.
Okay. But what's interesting about that is that that's the same percent as if they were alone. So you would think, and this is what the researchers say, that you would think that if they were alone, like 91% of the time, they would have reacted.
So based on the findings of that study, I'm feeling like, let's say I've been stabbed. No, that's a bit sad. Let me.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Let's say I have, I'm feeling really sick and
I'm
about to puke.
Oof.
And I'm on the MARTA train, taking the train to work.
Okay.
And I get to choose which car I'm going to throw up in.
Mm-hmm.
And after I throw up, I'm really going to hope somebody helps me and gets me to a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
What is the appropriate number of people on the train?
Oh, my goodness. Is this like a test?
Yeah, this is a test. Or, you know, just asking your learned opinion.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah, even better. I'm just going to say that maybe one or two other people on the train with you is greatly going to increase your chances of getting aid.
But not one. If it's just one person.
If it's one, even better.
Oh, okay.
That's my opinion, right? Just from what we've seen, that the lower the amount of people around you, the more apt they are to help you, correct? Okay. But if you're about to puke all over the place and 30 people are in the train with you, they're all going to back away.
Yeah, or...
I've already changed cars.
Well, it definitely provides a lot of insight into how crowds think. I mean, there's more to how crowds think. I believe we've covered some of this in the past, talking about groupthink and how crowds respond on a mental level. In our very, very recent episode, mm-hmm. we discussed sort of the physics of crowds and how a large number of people can quickly spiral out of control,
right,
and become this, like, the movement, the physical movement of the crowd becomes something that cannot be predicted or controlled.
Well, and the psychology is so interesting, because going back to the lady in distress experiment that Labatt did, is that the interveners, the people who did something, they claim that they acted that way because the fall seemed serious and it was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. But the non-interveners who were with the other people said that they were unsure what happened, and they decided it wasn't serious. And some felt that they didn't want to embarrass the researcher, which was that whole judgment part, right? So they were really influenced by the people that were in the room with them. And you just don't think that when you're making individual decisions. You don't even realize that on that level, you're sitting there calculating whether or not the person next to you is – unless you're highly self-aware, right?
Right.
You usually don't realize that that person's having an effect on your decision-making processes, which, again, brings into the whole question of free will about whether or not it really exists.
And this study is especially interesting given the way our lives have been affected by social media and the internet, mm-hmm. Because everyone has seen stories in the past year or two where somebody, basically put out a cry for help on Facebook, mm-hmm. on their Facebook profile. And then and in some of these cases, nobody really did anything. And then the person dies or, ends up trying to take their own life or something to this effect. And people are like, well, why didn't we do anything? Mm-hmm. Why did we just sit there and just scan over their depressing Facebook status update? Or why did we even maybe press ignore? Mm-hmm. Well, why didn't we do something?
Yeah, I was thinking about that, too, that when we talk about crowds these days, we really need to probably redefine what a crowd is, because it doesn't have to be a bunch of people in a physical room together. I mean, we have a crowd action via the internet these days with just as many community ties.
Yeah. I saw I was looking at a paper earlier from Georgia Institute of Technology, Georgia Tech, mm-hmm. Here in town, and they were actually using the bystander effect as a way to try and understand patterns of participation in mm-hmm. online classrooms. So I found that interesting. Like they were kind of, taking it slightly out of its context, because bystander effect deals more specifically with people responding to, mm-hmm. A bad situation, someone that's injured, somebody that's in danger, more of a life and death type of a thing, rather than are you paying attention to the lecture or not, or are you, participating in class?
Right.
But it did supply some insight into how these classrooms behave and to what degree they're going to interact with the class.
That makes total sense to me. In fact, that's, being in a classroom, I'm sure everybody knows that, whether or not you were 8 years old at the time or 20 years old, mm-hmm. when someone says something or something happens, don't you all look at each other to see how you're going to react?
Right.
I mean, it's a classic case of how a crowd affects one another.
Yeah. And, it's one of those things, too. If you're in a classroom where most people just do not care, mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of times you're going to be less likely to be the brainy egghead who's going to interact with the teacher. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could have an amazing lecturer, but if most of the people in there are sleeping or just kind of, shooting evil eyes at each other, then
drawing unicorns,
then it feels like you're going to be less likely to interact. Whereas if the class as a whole is really engaged, there's going to be this energy of engagement, mm-hmm. and you're going to want to be like, yeah, these are my thoughts on the fall of Byzantium.
Speaking of unicorns and doodling, didn't uh-huh. you just post something recently on Facebook about how that actually helps you retain information in a meeting?
Yes. Yeah, I was really that was just came out the other day. Put it on the Facebook a profile for Stuff to Blow Your Mind. And that it was a TED Talk, actually.
Yeah. I want to check that out because I was pretty excited about that.
Yeah. I had it on, but I was doodling, so I didn't really.
Of course. Yeah. But you retained everything.
Yeah. But yeah. No, that makes sense because I doodle a lot. And some of my note-taking is borderline doodling. It's just kind of.
Well, I've noticed just when you and I talk about podcast subjects sometimes, when we meet beforehand just to say, hey, what are we going to talk about, that you draw a lot of pictures when you're talking about a subject.
You mean when I'm explaining
you're
it?
You're illustrating it. It's pretty great.
Well, sometimes
we should post those, actually, sometimes.
Well, sometimes it's about, like, you know, I do a lot of talking with my hands sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes instead of doing that, I'll just, you know, you just sort of doodle and sort of draw the motions on the paper. I don't know why, but.
I don't know. Yeah. There you go.
So I actually do not have any listener mail because I forgot to get some. Because there's a seemingly endless supply of it, but I forgot to dip the ladle into the bucket.
I can't believe you forgot your ladle.
Yeah.
You didn't hear the scream on the inside, did you?
On the inside of the bucket?
Of me.
Oh.
Yeah, when you said that. We'll survive, though, I suppose.
Yeah. Though somebody,
another one.
A guy by the name of Brandon did come up to me at a campfire this weekend.
Because you were at a campfire, okay.
Yeah, well, it was in a backyard. I don't know if it's really a campfire, if it's in the backyard. Nobody's camping. But, you know, there's a fire, and so he came up and said, hey, this show's really great, you know, so.
Oh, thanks, Brandon.
So if you know me and you would like to approach me and tell me the show is great, do so. It will not be awkward at all. It'll be kind of awesome, and we'll grow closer for the experience. So.
I heard, too, that if someone does that to you, that you'll start crooning Stuff to Blow Your Mind song to them. Is that true?
We have a song?
In exchange for a pleasantry.
You mean the secret lyrics to the intro song that mm-hmm. we play every time? Oh, yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, it's only available if you approach me in person, though. Try not to do it at a funeral because I'm oath-bound to break into song, and I would prefer not to do it in front of an open casket.
There's a couple of awkward places where you probably shouldn't do it. All right, so there you go. I hope that you guys have all enjoyed some interesting facts about the bystander effect, and it certainly made me think about my own reactions to certain circumstances
here.
In my life, and whether or not I was unknowingly under the power of it.
Yeah, and I should also add that the at the dental office, they eventually did change the TV to Disney Channel, but it was a situation where the lady working the front desk kind of figured out, it's like, oh, maybe I should change off of a Special Victims Unit and maybe go to like Donald Duck or something.
That's all right, because they just went home and played Grand Auto Theft and killed a couple hookers anyway.
Grand Theft Auto. It's adorable that you thought it was Grand Auto Theft.
I always say it that way. So there you go.
Anyway, so if you have anything you would like to share with us, be it about Grand Auto Theft or your own encounters with the apathy of the crowds, then let us know about it. For starters, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We are Blow the Mind on both of those.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
Hey, everyone. This is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.